Welcome to the Create Your Kind Space podcast with me, your host, Caroline Lawrenson. Create Your Kind Space is about well-being and the different ways in which we care for ourselves and those around us. We're here to offer companionship and practical tips to brighten your day. We'll delve into the concept of kind spaces, chatting with an inspiring mix of people from across tech, wellness, and entrepreneurship. Let's learn together and sprinkle some much needed kindness in the world. So take a pause, relax, and let's start the journey. Imagine you've just become a mum for the first time, but you're struggling with your health. Appointment after appointment, test after test, you finally get the news you have multiple sclerosis. My guest, Dr. Clara Doran, opens up about her diagnosis and experience of living with a long-term health condition. She also shares her writing about her feelings and the challenges of becoming the patient instead of the doctor, and how this has led to her forthcoming memoir, Doctor Interrupted. I can't wait to find out more, so let's dive in. I am so excited because I have the huge privilege of speaking to the amazing Dr. Clara Doran today. And our topic is going to be around brain health. Clara is the founder of Noggin Brain Health and has been on an amazing journey. And I think it would be just wonderful for everyone to meet her. I am always inspired by the founders I meet, and definitely Clara is up there in terms of an inspirational story, an inspirational journey, and I can't wait to dive into that. So welcome, Clara.
Thank you so much for giving me some of your time.
So yes, you are a doctor. You worked as a GP. To kick us off, maybe you could tell us a bit about how did that come about? How did you end up getting into general practice?
Well, firstly, thanks for having me, and thanks for that very kind introduction. I'm from Edinburgh and trained in Newcastle in medicine, and the course in Newcastle was very sort of patient focused from the very beginning, which is part of the reason I went there. And it was really, I think, through that experience and kind of my own sort of personal drive to really be involved with patients as early and as much as possible, that general practice sort of appeared as the right career path for me. I like the idea of the variation, obviously building relationships with patients over the longer term where possible. I think just the sort of community feels general practice. Being a doctor in any level is a privilege, but I think, working in the community, seeing people, just in off the street sort of thing, in their very sort of, that sort of state is, just a really privileged role to be in. And GP was, the choice I made based on all those things.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, so a real calling. I think it's interesting. Maybe I could tell people a bit about how we met as well. So we are both founders, and we actually met through a program run by Accelerate Her. If anyone is listening and needs support in that area, you probably recommend them as well, Clara. One of my first things I did was their boot camp, and maybe that was was pre-pandemic because we were in person. I was really interested to know how you first got connected with them and that kind of part of your journey of how did you get into entrepreneurship?
Yeah, Accelerate Her was a great experience. Bootcamp was the first sort of connection I had with that as well. I did it remotely, and I think it really came about because our business came about from such a personal need that we focused on the products and what we were looking to create, a mission behind it, and then really sort of the business element of it came sort of secondary. And so once we had the products, it was really about how I was going to, learn how to talk about the products and talk about our business and talk about myself. And I looked for ways of kind of getting some help with that. And Accelerate Her was a great sort of starting point from that. We did the boot camp. I did the boot camp remotely, which I think again for me was brilliant because I was so terrified of the prospect that I think if it had been in person, it might have put me off. Doing it at home kind of felt like any time you're doing something brand new, I was just thinking, gosh, what is this really going to be like? Are they going to be nice? And of course, they were extremely nice and extremely encouraging. And everyone that I met on the boot camp was, kind of saying the same thing, how nerve-wracking it was. And again, I think it just makes you feel like it isn't just you. It's, it's tricky, talking about your business and talking about what you want to do and learning what that is. It's a new skill and you need people to help you do that. So Accelerate Her were great in that regard.
Yeah, it's such a lovely network. And I think it is that peer support element that is probably the strongest part, and us all being able to support each other and kind of help look out for opportunities. And then, just a sounding board or, some reassurance when we are having those kind of nervous moments of like, oh my gosh, like this thing is coming off and I'm really like scared. I've got International Women's Day next week, so I'm doing a keynote speech.
Oh,
and
wow.
Can I do this? Can I? And I'm like, yeah, I can.
Of course you can. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's big. But yeah, no. Well, good luck with that. Gosh, how are you feeling about it?
I think it's going to go well. I've had some coaching support and I'm actually really glad that I did that because I feel like it's helped to make everything feel more cohesive. Like the story and the narrative just feels more cohesive. And I like that. I think I'm going to be able to impart some really important knowledge, but in a way that's like special and has emotion to it and just builds that connection. I've never spoken in that way before. So yeah, well, I say I've never spoken in that way before, not in an audience kind of way, but
yeah.
Yes, I'm sure it'll be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just have to remember to breathe.
Yes, definitely. Well, I always think of those things as, we call them FFTs in our house, which is funny first time. And, when you're doing something for the first time, like you can never expect it to be like this easy thing that you just know exactly how to do. So whenever, again, our son's 10, and so whenever he's talking about something and says, oh, I can't do it, and oh, it was awful or whatever, then, I will say, well, that was your funny first time. So, of course, it was difficult. So I try and bring that to myself a bit as well. And yeah, sounds like it might be applicable for you in your speech as well. So
that's really good advice. I've not heard that one before. Yes, and definitely really good for children because I think they can often put pressure on themselves, and feel like they need to do well for their parents and their teachers and all these things. They've got a lot of pressure on them. Yeah. I love that. That's so beautiful.
Funny first time. Yeah.
That is definitely memorable as well. Yeah. Oh, awesome. So I would love for you to tell me a bit more about Noggin Brain Health and a little bit more about what kind of led you to create the product and what's the kind of like the why behind what you do?
As I sort of mentioned before, it was a really personal experience that took me really to create Noggin. Obviously I've been working in general practice, had my son and had some health challenges myself, just when he was a very small baby, which ultimately ended up being diagnosed as being multiple sclerosis, which is a scary sounding degenerative neurological brain condition, which has no cure and unfortunately does affect, when people at a young age, particularly in Scotland, high number of people with MS and a lot of women as well, which I'd kind of known about professionally but wasn't expecting to face it personally. And once that kind of became apparent, and things kind of moved on in terms of going back to work and, you know, sort of dealing with it as part of the rest of my life, I really turned my attention to brain health and sort of ways or what I could do to try and feel better. I was lucky to have great medical care and a great team. You know, the team in Edinburgh are fantastic, but I just really felt like I wanted to know more about what I could do to look after my own brain. So my son was very little at the time, and as you know, anyone that's a parent or experienced with young kids, you know, they're changing all the time, they're learning so much. And so it was really sort of just a really kind of, you know, time where we were at opposite ends of the spectrum. I was worrying about things going wrong for me, and yet seeing my son kind of blossom and pick up everything that was going on around him. So yeah, brains are amazing is the summary of that. And that, yeah, once I started to sort of dig into brain health, I really kind of realised there was loads I hadn't known before, even though I was a GP, and really the impact of our lifestyle on our brain health, how important that is for our well-being, how we feel, but also, you know, how risk of diseases and even sort of ongoing conditions, even when there is a diagnosis of something not so nice, those sort of lifestyle things are important to, you know, improving our symptoms and our overall sort of well-being and how we cope with it. So yeah, big topic, and it took me on a big sort of journey of learning sort of medicine and in a different way. I just studied functional medicine, which kind of just is slightly, it's not really conventional medicine, but combines a more integrative approach to mind and body and looks at sort of root causes of diseases. So that was all really interesting. Studied sleep science, and as part of all of that, nutrition came through as being a really important aspect. Which in conventional medical training really, you know, does not, I mean, I think it's changing a bit now, but, you know, when I was training, it was, you know, very minimal, any sort of training in that area, which is understandable. There's lots you need to learn. And at that time, it didn't really feature. But what I learned from studying about brain health is ultimately our brains are extremely energy hungry organs, and therefore what we eat, how we eat, and how nutrition impacts the brain is really, really important. And that kind of took me into the realm of supplements, which is, well, that's a minefield in itself. So that's where we kind of really got into, there's a lot to learn here. And again, I was really lucky to work with some nutritionists who are really respected, both from a product formulatory point of view, had loads of experience in that, but also from seeing patients and seeing clients over a number of years, so they had sort of front-faced experience with, you know, how nutritional supplements could really make an impact to people. So we worked with a great female team to develop the three products that we have at the moment.
It's amazing, isn't it? I think you're absolutely right when you think about brain health and how much we still need to learn about how our brains even work. It's a huge subject area, but I love that, you know, a lot of the things are, if it's related to lifestyle and your kind of holistic health, and you can make improvements in those areas, then it has an impact on your brain and the other organs in your body as well. So there are positive things that you can do to reduce your risk of some of these neurological conditions. Your experience, I guess, with multiple sclerosis is probably something that others can identify with. I wasn't sure how prevalent it is as a condition. I did know that it affects women more than men, but is it quite common? Like, is there a support network out there for people with multiple sclerosis?
There's loads of support, actually. There is, and again, yeah, so there's obviously various charities, MS Trust, MS Society. It's a very sort of active community in Scotland, but also worldwide. And I think one of the key things about MS is that it does tend to impact, or, you know, it's undiagnosed when people are young. And so although it has the kind of sounds of a older person's disease, sort of degenerative, all those kind of words, that, you know, sort of the people are often diagnosed into their 20s and 30s. So it's something, the support is actually very good in terms of how people live with a condition like MS. And that is, that's the those are the hashtags really, or that's how people often describe it, is living with MS. Because again, we are actually in a fortunate stage that there are more, many more treatments available now. Whilst they don't impact the, they're not curative treatments, they are sort of disease modifying, you know, supposedly disease modifying treatments, and they can reduce the number of relapses. And again, depending on what, you know, obviously how your disease progresses and obviously what you're prescribed, there are ways of managing it now, both medically and with social support and community support, which, again, when you speak to people who are older with MS, you know, maybe in their 60s or 70s, didn't have those same sort of options, you know, but back when maybe they were diagnosed in their 20s and 30s. So it's, you know, it's positive in that sense. There's a lot of work being done. Again, excuse me, Edinburgh is, you know, there's the Anne Rowling Clinic. There's a lot of research going on there as well. So there is, it's if there is a positive phase for a condition like this, this is probably it. You know, we're understanding more, the treatments are better, and the support is there. But similarly, I think the main thing I've learned about it, and again, I think a lot of people who have chronic conditions, not even just brain conditions, but chronic conditions, would say how individual the experiences are. And I think that's, you know, definitely a tricky side of it, that, you know, your condition isn't the same, although it may have the same label, how it impacts people varies day to day and varies dramatically from person to person. And I think that sort of uncertainty side of it, certainly for me, has been extremely challenging, and has taken quite a bit of time to kind of get into, yeah, feeling like I can handle that. And I think from speaking to other people, I think that's a tough part of it.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. I can't begin to imagine, you know, having a newborn, you know, having these symptoms and not really knowing, you know, what was happening, and being worried about your health and your future and your family and all that happening. And newborns, I don't know, did your son sleep? Because I was not ready for the sleep deprivation when I had kids. Oh my gosh, like, yeah, that must have been such a tough time for you.
It was. And again, it's, you know, it's 10 years, it'll be 10 years this year, actually, since I got my diagnosis. And that does feel like a bit of a landmark stage, because obviously 10 years is quite a long time, but also, yeah, so much has changed in that amount of time. And yeah, it's been a lot, but, you know, I feel, you know, I'm in a better stage with it. I was lucky, again, it's not something I talked about at the time, but I was lucky that our son slept actually really well. So I was one of those few, whilst there was a lot of difficult stuff going on, he really, from a very young age, yeah, got the sleep routine locked down. So somebody was looking after me somewhere, because that really made a mat. Well, as you said, it's brutal without sleep, and you don't know what's going on, do you? And yeah, the fact that he slept was good.
Shall I tell you something funny? So I once went to work, right? My son was probably only like 10 months old. I hadn't been back to work for very long. And I went to work with one green shoe and one black shoe. So I had these shoes, and they were identical apart from the color. So I didn't realize, because they felt the same. Like, obviously, yeah, I had them on the right feet, like one left and one right. And it wasn't until I got out the car.
Oh, God. Oh no.
And I was like, I can't go home. So the whole day in the office, and then I had the dentist later that day.
Oh no, so your feet are lying up on the yeah. Oh no.
So funny. It's so funny, like, to look back and like how delirious I was.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it actually, do you know what? It's not really a laughing matter. So, you know, sleep, like, it has such an impact on our health and well-being and our brains. And actually, that was one of the big reasons why I was really keen to have you come on the podcast, because I thought it'd be really useful for people, if sleep is something that they're struggling with, to get tips from an expert. And actually my other sort of I don't want you to feel like this is a GP appointment.
Yeah.
But my other thought process was, so my husband Thomas, who is my co-founder as well, I can't remember if I mentioned to you before, if we've talked about this before, so he has a history of strokes, and ever since his first stroke, sleep has actually been a big issue for him. I think you know, that I can't think of a night where he slept through the night.
Wow.
He often wakes up multiple times. And I don't know, it's probably somewhat to do with his health condition,
mm-hmm.
but also maybe the medication as well. So he
yeah.
has to take medication to thin his blood and make it less sticky. Yeah, so I feel like there's the kind of general thing of people having issues with sleep that might be a transient thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's some times when they sleep fine, and then maybe there's stresses that, you know, add to the issues
yeah.
in the evenings and at night time. But then there's people that have long-term health conditions
yeah.
that can make sleep more difficult. So yeah, while I've got you, I'd love to know, you know, what are your top tips?
It's such an important topic, first and foremost. And I think, again, if I could go back and if I were to keep a tally of all the patients I saw over all those years in general practice, like, I could comfortably say that sleep was, you know, something that we talked about, you know, all the time. I mean, I'm, you know, obviously it wasn't every consultation, but I would say it's probably at least three quarters it fed into something. And I sort of wish I knew then what I know now, because I think I would have been able to offer a bit more practical advice to people, because I think, you know, it's like this sort of enigma, really. You know, you go to bed, you go to sleep, and then you wake up and, like, actually loads of different things happen in your brain overnight. And it isn't just about energy and feeling, you know, sort of ready to face the day. There's a whole load of sort of biological processes that actually go on during sleep. You know, there's multiple stages of sleep that our brain goes through, and that all impacts on those processes and how effectively they're done, and impacts how we feel the next day, and can also be linked to some of the risks of some of these longer term conditions. So it is, you know, there's a reason it's a, you know, a medical specialty on its own, and that's because there's so many different, you know, elements to it, which I think, you know, obviously, you know, we just take for granted, until you probably have an issue, or, like you say, if you've got the experience with your husband and see how, when it doesn't go well, how it can impact you. So yeah, I think the first thing I would think of is that it, you know, being aware that it is this, you know, it's a natural process, and we will all go to bed and sleep. We have to. It's biologically programmed that that's what will happen. But actually, what goes on when we are asleep is so critical to other aspects of our health that I think, you know, really prioritizing sleep is so important. You know, if you are feeling under the weather with different things, feeling low in mood, or, you know, things like trying to lose weight, all those kind of things, actually starting with your sleep routine is, you know, a critical place to start. And I think, you know, sort of you mentioned tips about that. And for me, I would say, you know, my sort of top tip around sleep would really be that your sleep doesn't just happen when you go to bed. The quality of your sleep actually starts from when you get up in the morning. And it's important to think of sleep and the benefits of sleep in terms of quality, consistency, and the duration of your sleep. So, you know, if you read anything about it in newspapers or articles or anything, the sort of duration that's said for adults is 7 to 8 hours of sleep per night. But in reality, you know, a lot of us are not getting that amount. And I think it's at least a third of adults are not getting that quality of that sort of duration of sleep. And I think, you know, based on my experience anyway, I'm sure it's probably even more. So yeah, I think knowing that's what we should be getting, but then knowing that we're actually, a lot of us are not getting, first of all, a bit of comfort that, again, you're not alone if you're struggling with sleep. And then ways of trying to tackle it, I would, you know, as I say, it starts really when you wake up in the morning. And that really starts with sort of daylight exposure. Our brains are actually quite simple in some ways, that, you know, they want to be awake in the daylight and asleep at night. And modern life does as much as it can to confuse us on when it's not day and night because of devices. So getting outside or getting exposure to daylight early is really important to trigger the light receptors in a certain part of our brain that this is daytime, this is alert time, and this is when we need to be awake. So I think that's an important starting point. I think the other thing I would say sort of for in terms of daytime activities is around caffeine intake and being aware that, again, coffee shops are everywhere. And again, it's so much part of our routine now to go for coffee and, you know, that's great. But coffee and caffeine, you know, into the afternoon and evening is going to impact your ability to fall asleep. Caffeine can stay in your body for about seven to eight hours after drinking. So even if you have
as much as that.
So a half-life can be that length of time. So even if you're having a coffee in the early afternoon, whilst you're not getting the full benefit at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, there's still going to be that caffeine kind of circulating. Now, we're all different. Obviously, for some of us, we metabolize caffeine quicker, so it's not for everyone. But if we're struggling with sleep, thinking about caffeine and when you're drinking it is important. So those are some of my starting points. I think those are the daytime things I'd think about. So really trying to sort of after 12, 1 o'clock, you know, cutting out any caffeine options are important ways to try and help you fall asleep at night. I think the other things, the other big thing really is screens and use of screens. And this is where we get into...
It's the light thing again, isn't it?
It's the light thing, and it's the content of what we're looking at. And I think, you know, it is part of modern life. So again, obviously the ideal is that we turn the screens off, well, at least a couple of hours before bed, and that to get optimal sleep. And again, if you're struggling with sleep, you know, I think that is really important to prioritise that. Because we do know that blue light from the screens is activating this part of our brain where there is the light receptors, and it's, you know, it's confusing it basically that this is time to be awake, and it's not. So there's that to be in mind of. And then it's also the emotional aspect of what you're looking at. Because I think even when we think we're watching something funny or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, engaging, like passively. Yeah.
You know, you're still having emotional reactions, or even if you're messaging friends, even if it's all good news, which is, you know, that's obviously good. But again, there's a time for it, and actually going to bed isn't the right time because it does create this sort of emotional response that kind of negatively impacts your ability to wind down. And even when they look at, you know, they've looked at sleep studies for people that do use their devices into the evening. And again, there are some people, of course, everyone's different. So there are some people that would say, well, I'm on my phone till whenever and I sleep fine. But actually, when you look at sleep studies of people who are using devices late at night, even if they do sleep through the night, so they are getting the duration of sleep, the quality of the sleep isn't as good. They're not going through the sleep cycles into the deep restorative phase of sleep that we really need. As well as those who don't use the devices at nighttime. So those things are definitely important.
That's all really good advice. So one thing I've noticed, and actually I'm noticing it today because I had my dinner so much later last night because I was at an event, and I did not sleep well at all. And I feel like it's because my body was digesting. It was so busy, like I am digesting, that my brain was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be working here. Everyone else is supposed to be off duty now.
Completely. Yeah. No, absolutely. That's such a good point. Definitely that sort of bedtime, eating late obviously is not good, as you just said. And again, that's just because you're digesting your meal. Also, again, it's the volume of what you've eaten, and again, the content. So again, if you're eating sort of sugary foods and those kind of things, not saying you were at your dinner.
Sticky toffee pudding.
That's the one.
And I had a bit of tablet as well. So yeah, there is no way I was going to have a good night.
And again, I think the thing, important thing about that as well is, you know, we've got to enjoy ourselves as well. So there is, I think it's, you know, that sort of two things can be true, you know. So yes, that will impact your, probably eating late as a rule will impact your, the quality of your sleep. Avoid it if you can. And I think as a, you know, if you're looking at your, again, if you're struggling and you're looking at ways to try and sleep better, that's an important thing to try and amend and try and avoid eating within sort of 2 to 3 hours of bedtime. And even then, you know, think about your portion sizes of what you're eating, because again, big amounts will just take longer to digest. But then also, yes, of course, there's going to be times where that isn't possible. And kind of observing how that impacts you is important. But again, as a one-off or different things, then, you know, enjoying it is probably more important than worrying about it. But as a routine, earlier eating is good. Watching the sugar. I guess one thing, though, that is interesting, again, is I think most of us are familiar with the idea of being hangry. And it's not a nice feeling during the day, but you can also get hangry overnight, depending on what you've eaten before you go to bed, and or what you've eaten during the day, and that's all linked to sort of blood sugar and how your how what you've eaten impacts your blood sugar and your metabolism. So again, it's thinking about what you're eating and trying to not make it too sugary as your evening meal or dessert, making sure you're having protein and some healthy carbohydrates to keep your energy going, because again, your brain's busy overnight, it needs that energy, but you want it to be in the sort of the best form. And unfortunately, sugary treats and processed things are not good.
No. Well, there's so much in the news just now about ultra processed foods and refined sugar.
Yes, and so
I think we know these things are not good for us, but we maybe don't realise that, you know, the impact is not just putting on weight. It actually affects, you know, our brain and our organs as well. Yeah,
definitely. And I think, you know, like weight and sleep, like, though, you know, it sounds weird to say if you're trying to lose weight or trying to maintain a healthy weight, you know, start with, you know, going to bed. Like, it's completely counterintuitive, but actually, you know, because when you go to sleep, it isn't just about energy. Part of what happens in sort of those deep phases of sleep is about hormone production, and that hormone, the two hormones that control your appetite and control how hungry you are impacted by the quality of your sleep. So it's ghrelin is the one that controls how hungry you are, and when you don't sleep very well, that production is increased. And then leptin is the one that controls how full you are. And when you don't sleep very well, that production is less. So sleep quality down or sleep duration down, you're going to feel more hungry, but less full. So you're in this kind of very...
There's a double.
Yeah. So you're up against it. Like, again, if you're not sleeping, you know, you really... If your quality of sleep and you're not sleeping very well and you're trying to lose weight, you're almost... The word, I can't think of the phrase, but you're not giving yourself the best chance, put it that way, because of these hormonal processes that are going on. And then add into the fact that you probably are a bit tired and feeling a bit rubbish, so the last thing you want to do is go for a run or go for a walk or make a healthy choice about food. You just want to snuggle in and watch a movie, eat junk and feel better, and that's kind of what happens. And therefore you're in that sort of cycle of not losing weight, not feeling rested, probably feeling a bit bad about the fact that you're, you know, not doing the things you know you should be, and it just all kind of goes round on itself. So yeah, again, it comes back to prioritising the quality of your sleep, the routine of going to bed, and doing that consistently as much as you can. And again, it's not going to change in one night, and that works both ways. So again, one late night or one bad night or whatever, it doesn't, you know, it's not something to worry too much about, but it's about what becomes habit and what becomes routine. And that's where it can be trickier to move past it.
Yeah. Oh, that's all really valuable advice. Thank you. I was thinking about, so a big part of your research has been into nutrition. And what have you found in your research, like in terms of, I don't want to call it superfoods or things, but are there certain elements that your brain benefits from the most, like when it comes to helping with sleep?
Yeah, well, I think what it mostly benefits from is consistency in terms of what you're eating. I think there's a lot, as you said, there's a lot of talk about ultra processed food at the moment, I think that's just going to continue because we know there's lots of things in there that are disrupting our, again, gut microbiome and how we digest, and that also links back to our brain. So again, in terms of eating for sleeping to try and, you know, help with your sleep. Again, it's about routine of when you're eating. It's thinking about those sugary foods and the, you know, the things that are going to spike your blood sugar. And again, even if you're not sure whether something's sugary or not, you know, again, obviously chocolate and things we know are, but some of those, you know, more starchier products, like maybe trying to think of baked croissants or those kind of things where you feel, you know, you get that immediate sort of lift of energy, but actually the energy crash goes really quickly. And again, that is all because of this sort of blood sugar spike, which our brain does not like. And again, over periods of time, that will impact on our sleep quality. So, you know, eating regular meals at regular times, looking at sort of whole foods and home cooked foods, and trying to avoid the processed stuff as much as possible is important. Water is another really big one, super boring, but again, hydration is key to our brain functions, and that's important for sleep as well. So again, making sure you're drinking enough water during the day, but not so much in the evening that you're getting up to go to the toilet too much, because then obviously then you're undoing all your good work. Specific foods that I know have been helpful for trying to sleep, or if you're looking at that type of thing, obviously cherries. We know there's certain types of cherries that helps with melatonin production.
Nice.
So that's quite an interesting one. Kiwi fruit's another one that's so that's quite a useful one as well. But again, I think it's really about kind of the whole daytime routine and what you're doing the whole time.
That's more important. Yeah. You're not going to find a magic superfood that'll solve your issues.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, again, I don't think there's anything, you know, there's things that can help you feel more relaxed in terms of, you know, even supplements and teas and those kind of things. But, you know, if you're, you know, sleep is a lifelong good habit that you want to build. And as part of that, you want to build daily habits that support that sleep at night.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. Thank you. The one thing that I was, that I saw this week, because you shared it online, was about your memoir and the book that you're writing. So I definitely wanted to spend some time talking about that, because it's really exciting. I think, you know, for anyone, you know, thinking about writing a book, that's a big undertaking. So maybe you could kind of talk us through, like, how does that come about, and how's it going? And do you have any advice for anyone else listening that's maybe thinking about a memoir or a book?
Thank you for asking that. I did post this week, and it's something I'm like so excited about. I always wanted to write, really. Medicine was what I wanted to do. I was like, writing was the other thing that I really liked, and English and stories and all those kind of things. So I did go through a phase of thinking, oh, you know, is this the right thing? Should I be doing that instead? But actually, you know, obviously I'm glad the choice I made. It was through reading again. I mean, I've always read, but there were a few years ago, there was sort of a real surge, I think, in sort of, I started reading more memoirs, medical memoirs, but also just, you know, other things as well. And from reading about other people's experiences, it really made me kind of think, I've got experiences too that I think are something that definitely I want to write about. I don't know if anyone I want to read about, but I'm going to start by writing them down. And I guess that's what I would say as a starting point for anyone that is thinking, or they maybe have in their head they might want to write. I think, you know, you have to do it. You have to write it for yourself first and see what you've got. And I think that's the most important thing. And for me, it was, again, it goes back to brain health, really, because it was an incredibly powerful processing tool as well. Like, we know that writing, journaling, obviously, you know, people talk about that now, all those kind of routines and habits are really good for, you know, helping our brain. But for me, sort of writing in that kind of long form really helped me kind of come to terms with the different things that had happened. I decided to just write it all down. That's where I started. Lots of different things that I'd experienced as a new mum, obviously with my health, and some things throughout my career that had really kind of stuck with me, good and not so good. And I just, wrote it all down, poured out in notebooks and on my computer, all those different things, and started that before COVID. And then obviously COVID happened, didn't really have time to think about anything because we were also all over the place way back then. But again, I had time to read a bit more, so I was really reading a lot of memoirs. And then I saw a course that was for writing a memoir through Curtis Brown, who are a literary agent, but they also do a lot of creative courses.
Nice.
So I had to apply to get a place on it. So again, that kind of put me off because I thought, well, probably not going to get a place, but hey, I'm not really doing anything else at the moment and let's just see what happens. But I did get a place and I would, yeah, confidently say that if I was terrified about the Accelerate Her process, I was like three times more terrified about taking up my place on this course. And again, because it was remote, that actually enabled me to do it, because I think if it had been in person, I would have found reasons, particularly, you know, with a child, you've got lots of reasons to not do things. So, yeah, did the course and met some incredible people through it. And again, the support from those people just was the thing that made the difference. That kind of motivated me to keep going and start approaching agents. And that's what I did. So I started sending out my work and pitching, like the synopsis and all those things that you read about that you have to do. And again, I was just really lucky that I had an agent really early on show interest and said that she wanted to sign me, so to be her one of her clients.
Amazing.
So that was, yeah, again, I think it was just a really special moment and really kind of just validated that actually I want to keep going with this and write this story and keep telling this story and see where we end up.
Oh, that's so amazing. I think it's very powerful when you go through an experience as significant as yours, being able to use that in a positive way and share it with others. It's just so magical. So, yeah, well done you for being so brave. Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we're all going through experiences all of the time, and, you know, sharing those experiences, again, does give you support. It kind of, you know, just gives you all sorts of different things. And I think, yeah, as I say, from that sort of writing group, again, it was back to that thing of I had this massive fear about it, but then everyone was a bit scared. And again, people in the group were, most of them were actually writers in different forms. So like seeing people who were, you know, fully professional, but still having a bit of nerves and fear, back to what we said about that sort of funny first time, and even the sort of entrepreneurial journey, you know, it's amazing how many people you speak to who you would see as being, oh, wow, they're much further on than me, and they've done loads more than me and things, but everyone's still like, oh my God, what am I doing at different points? And yeah, I think whether it's writing, entrepreneurial work, you know, even, you know, day-to-day jobs, like you're taking on a new challenge, like it's you know, it's difficult when it's something different, but you just got to give it a go, don't you, and see what happens.
Oh, it's just amazing. Yeah. Oh, magical things are going to happen from it. I just know, I can feel it.
Well, we'll see, but thank you. It's it's been a great, it's great experience, and I guess it's I've learned more like from doing it, and even, you know, as, you know, doing my sort of writing and thinking about other things I might want to write about. Again, it's like everything, it's a skill, you learn as you go, and that's been a really powerful thing as well. You know, it's, you sort of see where you could improve, and
yeah, in terms of communication style and stuff.
Yeah,
I will definitely be linking all of your socials and things, because one thing that I really love is all the tips that you share online, and maybe that in itself could become a book.
Well,
you could get all your LinkedIn posts and turn them into a book. So yeah, definitely, if you're listening, following Clara is very helpful. You've always got words of wisdom. And I think what I particularly love is you're really down to earth. Like, it's always so relatable, and it never feels like it's all attainable. You know, it's all practical things that people can implement. And obviously, because you have that experience with your own long-term health condition, like, people will trust you, you know, because you are an expert both in a professional sense and a personal sense. What an amazing story. So just remind me, when, so you're recording the audio for the audio version just now, and then the book itself is out in the spring, did you say?
So I'm out as an audiobook in the spring. And there, yeah, we still don't have a print date as yet, but out on audio in the spring, narrated by myself. So yeah, that if you've yeah, it's been that I suppose an experience as well, just listening to yourself talk for such a long period of
Oh, it's
time,
hard, isn't it?
not be interrupted by people. You know, you're so used to being interrupted by kids or something else. So yeah, that was a bit, yeah, but again, another amazing experience. And I worked with a sound engineer that was just incredibly supportive and professional, and had obviously, yeah, done, you know, been in that field for so long that it was a really positive experience. So yeah, audiobook coming first, and yeah, it should be springtime. So yes, I'll keep you posted.
Amazing. Oh, so wonderful. Yeah, and hopefully there'll be more books in the future. When I was thinking about our conversation, I was going to ask you, do you know of the psychology mum? Have you heard of the psychology mum? She has Brian the Brain, and she does some beautiful books that are around mental health, but there are lots of practical tips and stuff. And I wonder if there's like a wee collab opportunity there, because yeah, you could be like a really powerful duo.
Well, that's definitely something I should look into. I think illustrations are so powerful, aren't they? I think yeah, I think that is a really you know, amazing way of, when you get it right, of being able to communicate some really important points.
Definitely.
And it's really accessible, and yes, good for Instagram and all that stuff, but actually it's just nice to be able to look at it even in a book form as well. So yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, she's done great work. And I think Liz and Molly, the illustrators that work with Adam Grant's work with as well, I think their book is Big Feelings. Should get that right. But yeah, they've gotten something similar where, again, it's more very simple, really simple drawings, but it's just really, yeah, really
Powerful,
condenses a lot of
yeah, gets the
information
message
into,
across.
yeah, no, it's good. I think it's a really
We'll
nice.
look that up, and we can put a link in, so because I haven't seen that one, and I'd love to see that
In fact, I've got it here, I think. Yeah. Oh,
yet.
it is. Yeah, Feelings. I got it right, that one.
Oh yeah, put a link to that one, and I'll put a link to the Psychology Mum ones as well, because they're really nice.
Yeah, they are really good. Yeah, I
Yeah, and you
think
can kind of
they.
dip in and out of them, which is good.
Yes,
Yeah.
I think that's good. And again, for kids, again, obviously those are more adult books, but I think, again, for kids, you know, talking more and more about mental health, and that's great. And brain health is a sort of key element of that. But I think illustrations as well are as a really useful way of trying to communicate that sort of information.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Thank you. I'm really excited for you. I just can't wait to, yeah, I can't wait to listen to it when it's ready. So I think we're kind of getting closer to the end of the conversation. And with all of my guests, I love to ask them about how they created their kind spaces. So what are the things that you really lean into or go to when you're feeling a bit out of balance?
I think, yeah, that's something I've been thinking about. And I probably, for me at the moment, I think maybe different at different times, at different stages of my life. But I would say right now, my kind space is linked to being able to write. So I feel if I'm struggling or I've had a lot going on, as you know, having your own business and founding something brand new is full of challenges that you don't even know exist until they appear in your inbox. And when I'm in a place where I'm really feeling like, oh, struggling with different things, being able to write with my laptop or a notebook is where I would create my kind space. And finding somewhere where I can do that quietly, even if it's at home on my own with the door closed, or I've got a couple of particular coffee shops that I'll go to at certain times that I know are quieter. But once I'm there with my laptop and my earphones on, then after an hour or so, I'm ready to face the world again.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good, isn't it? I've been doing more journaling this year. So that was kind of my thing at the start of the year. I was like, I'm going to do journaling every day. And I do think it's been helping as well. So yeah. And you wouldn't think like something as simple as that could make such a difference. But some of it for me is like, I get up and I do it first thing in the morning, and it's because I know it's my time as well. But no one else, like, yeah, everyone else is like either still in bed or sometimes my son is up. But yeah, it's like quiet time just for you.
No, absolutely. And again, that's a really important, again, a great creative tool, great sort of, you know, mind health tool to be journaling. We know that's important and works really well for brain health. But again, going back to your sort of question around writing, you know, there's a sort of whole sort of process that they call morning pages, which is exactly that. And yes, it could be journaling around, you know, particular things that are going on. But actually, if you're wanting to be writing or being creative in any way, having that time to just sort of write out anything, it could be a story ideas or it could be to-do lists, it doesn't matter what it is. But actually the physical process of writing consistently for 20 minutes, half an hour, could in the morning, if you can do that, is really a really good way to kind of get into that mindset of doing more creatively, if that's something you're interested in.
Yeah, awesome. Before we wrap up, is there any other exciting things that we've maybe not covered? Like we talked about the book, which is the big thing, but anything else bubbling in the background that you want to share?
Bubbling in the background, probably the only thing, well, it's exciting. It's just a little bubble at the minute. So it's, teeny bubbles. So at the moment we've got three adult products, Oomph, Pause and Foggo. And those are products, Foggo's for sort of perimenopausal symptoms, brain fog and feeling for more energy. Oomph is around energy, focus and concentration. And Pause is about unwinding and improving sleep quality. But kids is at the heart of brain health for me. So we are looking at a children's product, which we're collaborating with a Scottish university with, to help work on developing that in 2024. So as I say, it's at the very, very early stages, but that's something to watch out for. And that's something I'll be talking about more, hopefully, as I've got more to talk about.
Nice. I remember we spoke about that before, because is it the Rowett Institute in Aberdeen that you said? Yeah, so that's close to where I am, yeah.
Great.
They have such an amazing reputation as well.
It's, again, it's just, you know, what we've done, the products we have already, you know, have been, you know, we know they're really great in terms of benefits and how people feel when they're taking them. You know, I think it'd be really exciting to work in a different way to create something really unique for children's nutritional benefit and ultimately their brain health. It feels quite, again, another new thing that feels quite scary, but we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, if anyone can do it, it's you.
well, I'll let you know. Yes, we'll keep you posted.
Awesome. No, thank you so much. The other thing I do need to check as well is how people can get in touch with you. So do you have a favourite place that you live online?
LinkedIn is where I am mostly. I'm on LinkedIn and I think it's at Dr. Clara. I need to check. I'll come back on that one.
We'll pop it in the show notes, yeah.
Yeah, LinkedIn, but I'm also on Twitter. And again, also on Twitter and a little bit Instagram, but I'd say LinkedIn or Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, as well.
Yeah, I still call it Twitter as well. Very confusing.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So we'll pop some links as well, because I'm sure people want to get in touch and ask you some questions, find out when your book is going to come out, and it's hardback or paperback version. Yeah, awesome.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Well, whether it's brains or books or supplements or anything, then yes, writing, then yeah, any questions, I'm always happy to try and answer.
I've really enjoyed this catch up, and thank you for sharing all your insights into how we can keep our brains a bit healthier and improve our sleep. I think that's really going to help people. And also sharing about your journey with your own health condition as well, because I know that you're talking about these sorts of things, it can be challenging in itself. So thank you so much for being an amazing guest.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you.
I think there's nothing more powerful than when someone takes a life experience and uses that to help others. Dr. Clara is one of the most courageous, intelligent, and kind people I've ever had the honour of meeting. I'm very excited for the book launch, and I hope you'll all get behind her to help broaden the reach of her amazing work, helping others through difficult diagnoses and educating us about the importance of brain health. As the podcast series continues, I encourage you to get in touch and share your stories and tips. I'd love to hear from you. Pop me an email at caroline@tltechsmart.com or message on social media @createyourkindspace.